Chapter 20. Godbreaker. Marilyn moved across the botanical garden, her fingertips trailing along the dewy leaves and petals of the rose bushes. They were not hers, but that didn't stop her admiring them. Only one of her sisters had the patience and skill to grow roses in the choking air and sickened soil of the city, and that was Alana. All other blooms in the botanical garden were raised by cultivation servitors, and in Marilyn's opinion, it showed. Her fingers danced along the wet petals of the soot-darkened roses, amazed as always at how lovelier and fuller Alana's flowers were in comparison to the modest blooms grown by the augmented slave workers. They lacked inspiration, clearly, and no doubt the severance of their souls had much to do with it. Passing through the spacious garden, she entered the rectory. The building's air filters were straining, keeping the main chamber cooled. Prioress Sindal was sat, as she almost always was, at her oversized desk of rare stonewood, scribing away in meticulous handwriting. She looked up as Marilyn entered, peering through the corrective eye lenses that had slipped to the end of her nose.
"Prioress, we've received word from Tempestora."
Sindal's cataracted eyes narrowed, and she gently sprinkled sand across her parchment, drying the fresh ink. She was 71 years old, and she didn't just look it, she also sounded it when she spoke.
"What of the Sanctorum?"
"Gone,"
Marilyn swallowed.
"Survivors?"
"Few, and most are wounded. The hive has fallen, and the sanctorum of the Order of our Martyred Lady is overrun by the enemy. We received word now that there aren't enough survivors to retake their sanctorum as of yet. Our own sisters in the ash and fire wastes are moving to support."
"So, Tempestora is gone. What of hive Stygia to the north?"
"Still no word, Prioress. They are surely enduring the siege as we are."
The old woman's hands were palsied, though she found that writing always steadied them for reasons beyond her understanding. They shook now as she set the completed parchment aside on a loose pile of several others.
"Hell's Reach has weeks left, but little beyond that. The siege is almost at our own gates."
"That brings me to the second of the morning's messages, Prioress."
Marilyn swallowed again. She was clearly uncomfortable and resented being the one sent to deliver these messages. But she was the youngest and often relegated to these tasks.
"Speak, sister."
"We received a message from the Astartes commander in the city, the Reclusiarch. He sends word that his knights are en route to stand with us in the defence."
The prioress removed her eyeglasses and cleaned them with a soft cloth. Then, carefully, she placed them back onto her face and looked directly at the young girl.
"The Reclusiarch is bringing the Black Templars here?"
"Yes, Prioress."
"Did he happen to say why he felt the sudden wish to fight alongside the Order of the Argent Shroud?"
He had not, but Marilyn had been paying close attention to the scraps of information that made it over the vox with any clarity. This, too, was one of her duties as the youngest, while her sisters were preparing for battle.
"No, Prioress. I suspect it ties into Colonel Saren's decision to break up the remaining defenders into separate bastions. The Reclusiarch has chosen the temple."
"I see. I doubt he asked permission."
Marilyn smiled. The prioress had fought with the Emperor's Chosen before, and many of her sermons had included irritated mentions of their brash attitudes.
"No, Prioress, he didn't."
"Typical Astartes. When do they arrive?"
"Before sunset, Mistress."
"Very well. Anything more?"
There was little. The compromised Vox network had offered several suggestions of severe enemy Titan movement to the north, but confirmation wasn't forthcoming. Marilyn relayed this, but she could tell the Prioress's mind was elsewhere. On the Templars, most certainly.
"Damn it all,"
the old woman muttered as she rose from her chair, placing the quill in the inkpot.
"Well, don't just stand there gawping, girl. Prepare my battle armor."
Marilyn's eyes widened.
"How long has it been since you wore your armor, Prioress?"
How old are you, girl?
15, mistress.
Well, then, let's just say you couldn't wipe your own backside the last time I went to war.
The old woman's forehead barely reached Marilyn's chin as she shuffled past.
But it'll be good to deliver a sermon with a bolter in hand again.
Elsewhere in the temple of the Emperor Ascendant, the sisters were making ready for war. The Order of the Argent Shroud were not in Hell's Reach in any significant force, their contributions thus far being little more than a series of fighting withdrawals from churches across the city. 97 battle-ready sisters manned the temple's walls and halls, standing guard over several thousand menials, servitors, preachers, lay sisters, and acolytes. The temple itself was formed of a central basilica, surrounded by high rock-crete walls bedecked in leering angels and hideous gargoyles staring out at the city beyond. Between the walls and the central building, acre upon acre of graveyard reached out from the basilica in every direction. Thousands of years before, they had been lush garden grounds, grown and tended by the first of Armageddon's settlers. Those same settlers were buried here, their bones long turned to dust and their gravestones weathered faceless by time. Interred alongside them were generations of their descendants, holy servants of the Imperium, and the respected dead of Armageddon's steel legions. No one was buried here now. The graveyard was considered full. Official records numbered the graves around the basilica as 9,108,460. Currently, only two people knew this was incorrect, and only one of them cared about the discrepancy. The first was a servitor who had been a gardener in life and had devoted several of his living years, before the augmetics had stolen his reason and independence, to counting the graves as he tended the gardens around them. He'd been curious, and it had satisfied him to learn the truth. He kept it to himself, knowing to report it to his superiors might bring down accusations of laxity in his primary duties. He was, after all, a garden tender, and not a stock counter or cogitator. 3 months after he had satisfied himself with the truth, he was found stealing from the temple's tithe boxes and sentenced to augmetic reconfiguration. The second person who knew the truth was Prioress Sindal. She had also counted them herself over the course of 3 years. To her, it was a form of meditation, of bringing herself to a state of oneness with the people of Armageddon. She had not been born here, and in her devoted service to the people of this world, she felt her meditative technique was apt enough. She had, of course, filed amendments to the records, but they were still locked in the bureaucratic cycle. The temple's cardinal council were notoriously foul at having their staff deal with paperwork. Most gravestones were stacked close together in clusters of bloodline or fealty, and there was no conformity in the markers. Each was a slightly different size, shape, material, or angle to those nearby, even in sections where the rows were ordered in neat lines. In other parts of the graveyard district, finding one's way along a pathway was akin to navigating a labyrinth, with weaving away between the graves taking a great deal of time. The Temple of the Emperor Ascendant itself was, by imperial standards, a thing of haunting and gothic beauty. The spires were ringed by stone angels and depictions of the Emperor's primarchs as saints. Stained glass windows displayed a riot of colours, showing scenes of the God-Emperor's great crusade to bring the stars into union beneath humanity's vigilant guidance. Lesser depictions were of the first settlers themselves, their deeds of survival and construction exaggerated to deific proportion, showing them as the builders of a glorious, perfect world of golden light and marble cathedrals, rather than the industrial planets they had founded in truth. The sisters of the Order of the Argent Shroud had not been idle during the months of warfare that ravaged the rest of the city. Lesser shrines in the graveyard were both heavy weapon outposts and chapels to their founder, Saint Silvana. Angular statues of solid silver, each one of the weeping saint in various poses of grief, triumph, and contemplation, stood silent watch over turret pods and barricaded gun nests. The walls themselves were reinforced in the same way as the city walls, and bore the same ratio of defense turrets per meter. These remained manned by Hell's Reach militia. The temple courtyard's great gates were not closed. Despite the protestations of the Cardinal Council, Prioress Sindal had demanded the doors be kept open until the last possible moment, allowing more and more refugees to enter over the weeks of siege. The Basilica's undercroft housed hundreds of families who hadn't been able to enter the subterranean shelters for reasons of criminal activity, administrative error, or outright bad luck. Bunched together in the gloom, they came up for morning and evening prayer, adding their voices to the singing pleas that reached up the immaculately painted ceiling, where the God Emperor was depicted staring off into the heavens. The temple of the Emperor Ascendant was, in short,
a fortress.
A fortress filled with refugees and surrounded by the largest graveyard in the world.
We are the last to arrive. 29 of my brothers already await my arrival with our cargo gunship grounded nearby. It brings our total force to 35, if one was to count Eurysium laboring in the forlorn hope of him bringing the weapon across the ash wastes. 35 of the 100 that landed in Hell's Reach 5 weeks before. One of those awaiting our arrival is the one warrior I have done all I can to avoid for the last 5 weeks. He kneels before the open gates of the temple's compound, his black sword plunged into the marble before him, helmed head lowered in reverence. As with the Templars around him, almost all evidence of scripture parchment, wax crusader seals, and cloth tabard is gone from his armor. I recognize him because of his ancient armor and the dark blade he prays to. Jurisian himself has worked on that armor, repairing it with reverence each time he has been honored with the chance to touch it. Before Jurisian, a host of other masters of the forge maintained the relic warplate through the centuries, back to its original forging as a suit of armor for the Imperial Fists Legion. While our armor shows dull gray wounds under the stripped paint, this knight's warplate, forged in a time when Primarchs walked the galaxy, shows gold beneath the battle damage. The legacy of Dawn's Legion is still there if one knows where to look, between the cracks revealed by war. The knight rises, pulling the sword from the marble with no effort at all. His helm turns to face me, and a faceplate that once stared out onto the battlefields of the Horus Heresy regards me with eye lenses the color of human blood. He salutes me, sword sheathed on his back and his gauntlets making the sign of the Aquila over his battered breastplate. I return the salute, and rarely in my life has the gesture been so heartfelt. I am finally ready to stand before him and endure the judging stare of those crimson eyes.
"Hail, Reclusiarch,"
he says to me. "Hail, Bayard," I say to the Emperor's champion of the Hell's Reach Crusade. He watches me, but I know he is not seeing me. He sees Mordred, the knight whose weapon I bear and whose face I wear.
"My liege!"
Priamus comes forward, kneeling before Bayard.
"Priamus!" Bayard Vox laughs. "Still breathing, I see."
"Nothing on this world will change that, my liege."
"Rise, brother. The day will never come that you must kneel before me."
Primus rises, inclining his head in respect once more before returning to my side.
"Arterian, Bastilan, it is good to see you both. And you, Nero."
Nerevar makes the sign of the Aquila, but says nothing.
"Cador's fall tore at my heart, brother. He and I served in the Sword Brethren together. Did you know that?"
"I knew it, my liege. Cador spoke of it often. He was honored to serve at your side."
"The honor was mine. Know that 50 of the enemy died by my blade the day I heard of his passing. thrown, but he was a warrior to quench the fires of the stars themselves. I miss him fiercely, and the Eternal Crusade is poorer without his sword.
You do great honor to his memory.
Nero's voice is choked with emotion.
Tell me, brother.
Bayard's tone lowers, as if the refugees standing and staring at us outside the great gates have no right to hear of what we speak.
I heard his death wound was in the back. Is this so?
Nero's nod comes with reluctance.
It is.
I also heard he killed 9 of the beasts alone before succumbing to his wounds.
He did.
9. 9! Then he died facing his enemy, as a knight must. Thank you, Nero. You have brought me comfort this day. Welcome, brothers. It has been too long since we stood united.
There are general murmurs of assent, and Bayard looks to me. I smile behind my mask. They rode in the back compartment of a trundling Chimera armored personnel transport, their backs thumping against the metal walls with each sharp turn. It had been parked on the highway itself, riddled with bullet holes and lasburns, but still very much fueled and ready to roll. Andre and the others had dragged the bodies of dead legionnaires out onto the road, and the stormtrooper had forced the dockers to say a short prayer over the corpses before he would, as he put it, steal their ride.
Manners cost nothing,
he told them.
And these men died for your city.
The troop section in the back of the Chimera was a typical slice of guard life, smelling of blood, oil, and rancid sweat. On creaking benches, McHernus and his dockers, along with Asavan Tortellius, recruited to their cause, sat and waited for Andre to get them all the way down the Hell's Highway. He was not a good driver. They had mentioned this to him, and he professed not to know what they were talking about. Besides, he'd added, the left tank tread was damaged. That was why he kept skidding. Also, he'd amended, last of all, they should shut up. So there. Andre cycled through Vox channels, still getting no luck on any frequency. Whether every Vox tower in the city was gone or the Orcs had some intense jamming campaign going on was beside the point at this stage. He couldn't get in touch with his commanders, and that left him to his own devices. As always, he would go forward. It was the way of the Legion, and the creed of the Guard. The way he saw it, the Ecclesiarch owed him a favour. In this case, going forward meant making a stand with the Black Knights until he could find someone, anyone, from his command structure. There'd been a particularly galling moment when he'd managed to contact elements of the 233rd Steel Legion Armored Division, but they were in the middle of being annihilated by an enemy scrap titan formation and had no time for pleasantries. Fate was laughing at him. Andre was sure of it. The one Imperial force he'd been able to reach were minutes from being wiped out anyway. This was no way to fight a war. No communication between any forces. Madness. Smoke and flames were on the horizon ahead, but that indicated next to nothing of any use in determining direction or destination. Smoke and flames were on every horizon. Smoke and flame was all each of the horizons had become. Andre was not laughing. This did not amuse him, no sir. He changed gear with a nauseating grind of metal hating metal. A chorus of complaints jeered from the back as the Chimera juddered in protest and shook his passengers around some more. He heard someone's head clang off the interior wall. He hoped it was the fat priest's. Andre sniggered. At least that was funny. declared the Vox.
Ha ha! Now this was progress. This is Trooper Andre, of the...
He closed his mouth as the transmission crackled into a semblance of clarity. The burning district ahead, through which he'd need to pass to reach the distant temple, it was the Rostoric Ironworks. The Vox told of a Titan's death wails.
Hold on!
He called back, and accelerated the battered transport along the Hell's Highway towards the emerging shape of Storm Herald above the surrounding industrial towers. The link was savaged by bound-in-blood's Mortis cry. Zaha twisted in her coffin, trying to filter the empathic pain from the influx of sensory information she needed to focus on.
Her fistless arm punched forward in the milky fluid,
and the Titan obeyed her furious need.
Firing!
Valiant Casimir confirmed.
In the center of the industrial sector, ringed by burning towers and crushed manufactories,
the Imperator Titan weathered a hail of enemy fire from scrap walkers that barely reached its waist. Its shields rippled with searing intensity, corona bright and almost blinding. The plasma annihilator amassed power, sucking in a storm of air through its coolant veins and juddering as it made ready to release. Around the god machine's legs, the waddling orc walkers blared sirens and howling warnings to one another. Burning vapor clouded around the shaking plasma weapon as it vented pressure, and with a roar that shattered every remaining window in a kilometer-wide radius, Storm Herald fired. Three of the lesser scrap titans were engulfed in the flood of boiling plasma that surged from the weapon, melting to sludge in the white-hot sunfire. Zaha's arm was aflame with sympathetic agony. She did her best to blank it from her mind, focusing instead on the rattling crawl of insects over her body. Her shields were taking grave damage now. Storm Herald could not linger here for much longer.
Bound in blood isn't rising, my princeps!
Zaha knew this. She'd heard its soul scream across the Legio's princeps level link.
He is dying.
Orders,
stand.
My princeps.
Fight. He stand. Is dying.
Fight.
Stand. Fight.
The Titan shuddered as another walker staggered closer. Its shoulder cannons booming. Standing above the downed Reaver-class Titan bound in blood, Storm Herald returned fire with its incidental weapon batteries, flash-frying the lesser machine's void shields in a hail of incendiary fire. Zaha pushed her other arm forward through the ooze, laughing as she moved. Storm Herald's other arm, the colossal Hellstorm cannon, thrummed as its internal mechanics chambers and drive engines cycled up to firing speed.
My princeps!
Lon and Casimir warned in the same breath. Zaha cackled in her tomb of fluid.
Die!
Die!
The enemy scrap titan was shredded by five energy lances blasting from Storm Herald's Hellstorm cannon. In less than 3 seconds, its plasma core was breached and critically venting, and in less than five, it had exploded, taking the bulk of the fat-bodied gargant with it. Shrapnel shards the size of tanks hammered off the Imperator's void shields, leaving distortions of bruising while the generators struggled to compensate.
Secondary impacts from the turbo laser batteries. Cog's teeth. We struck the G-71 orbital landing platform. My princeps, I implore you to use caution.
Engine kill.
She licked her cold, wrinkled lips.
Engine kill.
Engine kill.
Half a kilometer behind the dead enemy walker, its foundation struts destroyed by the laser salvo from Storm Herald's Hellstorm cannon, a sizable landing platform crashed down to the ground, sliding on fouled gantries to smash through the roof of a burning tank manufactorum. An avalanche of rockcrete, broken iron and steel was all that remained of both installations, at the heart of a cloud of grey-black smoke and rock dust. The Iron Yard had played host to the pitched battle between Titans and infantry for several days. Little was left, yet neither side was giving ground.
My princeps!
No more lectures. I do not care.
No more lectures. I do not care.
My princeps,
Valian repeated.
New contact behind us.
She spun in the fluid, fish-like and alert. Storm Herald followed with ponderous slowness, its fortress legs thudding down onto the ground. The cityscape view through the Titan's eyes panned, showing nothing but devastation.
The scanner blur is either several walkers together or a single engine of our size.
The adept, hunched by the Orspec console, turned to regard the pilot crew with three bionic eyes, each with a lens of dark green glass. A blurt of machine code disagreed with Lon's appraisal.
Negative. Thermal signature registers distinct single pulse.
One enemy engine.
That isn't possible, she thought,
but never let it reach her vocalizers. An uneasy tremor was running through the Titan's bones, and she felt it as keenly as she'd once felt the wind on her skin in another lifetime.
My princeps, we must disengage,
Lon said, staring out into the burning iron yard.
We need to rearm and cool the plasma core in standard sustained venting procedure.
I know that better than you, Lon.
I know that better than you, Lon.
But I am not abandoning a district I have spent four nights fighting to hold.
But I am not abandoning a district I have spent four nights fighting to hold.
My princeps, there's precious little left standing to defend,
Lon pressed.
I repeat my recommendation to withdraw and rearm.
No. I am sending Regal and Ivory Fang north to hunt the inbound enemy engine and confirm with visual scanning.
No. I am sending Regal and Ivory Fang north to hunt the inbound enemy engine and confirm with visual scanning.
Lon and Casimir shared a glance from across the command deck. Both men were restrained in their control thrones, and both men wore the same expression of frustrated doubt.
My princeps,
Casimir tried, but he was cut off.
See? They move.
On the hololithic display screen, the runes denoting the scout titans Regal and Ivory Fang broke away from their perimeter-stalking patrol to the west and strode northward in search of the incoming thermal pulse.
My princeps, we do not have the ammunition reserves required to inflict destruction-level damage on an enemy engine of comparable size to us.
I am venting the heart's excess fusion mass and heat exchangers.
Even as she vocalized the orders, she was sending empathic pulses through her links to make it so.
My princeps, that is not enough.
He's right, my princeps.
Casimir had turned in his throne and was looking back at her fluid tank now.
You are too close to Storm Herald's wrath. Return to us and focus.
We are defended by three Reavers and our own scout screen. Be silent.
Two Reavers, my princeps.
Yes, two. She pulled back from the immersion of rage. Yes, two. Bound in blood was silent and dead, its power core cooling and its princeps voiceless. In her confused thinking, she did not mean to vocalize her next words.
We have lost seven engines in 1 week of battle.
Yes, my princeps. Prudence would serve us best now. If the Auspex is true, we must withdraw.
She floated in her coffin, hearing the curious humanity in their voices. Such emotion, such curious intensity affecting their speech tones. She recognized it as fear, without truly recalling what the sensation felt like.
We have killed almost 20 of the foe's engines. But I concede. Sound the withdrawal as soon as the warhounds have confirmation.
The first Imperial engine to bear witness to the Godbreaker was Ivory Fang. It stalked fast and low on its backwards jointed legs, the side-to-side pitch of its stomping gait adding a feral, if mechanical, grace to its dawn hunt. Warhound class. And it suited the name, lone wolfing its way through the wrecked industrial sector, striding around the shells of tanks destroyed in the week-long struggle for the Rosteric ironyard. Sometimes its hooved feet would crunch down on the soft meat of burned bodies and render them into pulp smears along the ground. Dead Skitari, guardsmen, factorum workers, and greenskins littered the district. Ivory Fang was commanded most ably by a princeps by name of Haven Havelock. Princeps Havelock dreamed, as did most of his ilk, of one day mastering a great battle titan, and perhaps even one of Invigilata's precious few imperators. His fellow princeps, equals and superiors alike, spoke well of him, and he knew his place in the Legio as a solid, reliable scout titan commander was assured, valued, and deserved. Patience was foremost among his virtues. Patience and cunning. That reasoned, meticulous hunting instinct bled through the mind bond into Ivory Fang. Twinned man and machine were past masters at the kind of deep urban stalks where warhound titans most excelled. The rough link between Titan commanders, maintained throughout the city, had suffered just as Imperial Vox had suffered. But Havelock was reassured by the fragments of meaning that pulsed through the chaos. If there truly was an enemy scrap Titan out there, it was nothing the battle group could not deal with. Storm Herald was no more than 2 kilometers to the south, and with it were Danol's Retribution and the Ghoul. Both Reavers, with victory banners descending from their armor plating that would put mid-range Titan princeps from any other Legio to shame. Nothing the beasts could hurl at them would break such a formation. Even the largest Gargant would fall to Storm Herald.
"I see nothing,"
came the aggravated spurt of machine code from his fellow princeps, Fierna of Regal. Havelock spent a quarter of a second consulting his internal tracking runes. The link to his Titan's Auspex sensors formed a rough, instinctive knowledge of his kin's locations in his mind. Regal was a half kilometer to the northeast, moving at speed through a small cluster of iron smelteries. It would have been in visual range had the space between the two Titans not been obstructed by ruined manufactories.
"I see nothing either."
It's the heat,
she complained.
Hunting for thermal signatures in this is like black in the night sky.
My Auspex readers show nothing but thermal disruption. Horus himself could be hiding in here and I would not...
Ferner?
"Registering energy discharge of significant size to the northeast,"
Havelock's moderati called out.
"Confirmed,"
murmured the tech adept that hunched in a station behind the princeps' throne.
"Ferner,"
Havelock tried once more.
"Bring us about and move northeast at aggressive intent speed. Everyone be ready."
He twitched in his restraint throne as the Titan obeyed his pilot's urgings. The connection feeds were alive with subtle static, itching at his nerves. Ivory Fang was keen. It had sensed something. And then it hit Havelock, too. He drooled through clenched teeth, shuddering against the leather bindings that restrained him in place. The pain of Regal's mortis cry faded, and Havelock breathed again. Ferna was gone, as was her Titan. She'd been a warhound, and her link to the others was tenuous and weak in comparison to the strength of a bond to the greater god machines. The pain bled away fast, bringing relief in its wake. The Titan clanked its way down a subsidiary alley, its weapon arms rising in readiness. Havelock sent several mental urgings in quick succession, triggering autoloaders, coolant valves, and bracing pistons into activity. Ivory Fang rounded the corner at the alley's end, stalking out into the main street. As it had been since this morning, this sector was still aflame because of the destroyed refineries and petrochemical stores, with about half the buildings finally quieting into smouldering ruins. But the fighting was done here.
"Where is the bastard?" Havelock whispered.
The Auspex chimed, once, weak.
"We have movement,"
the tech adept grumbled, not looking up from his scanner console.
"There is..."
I see it. "Back away now!"
It came from the black clouds, rumbling forward in a clumsy mess of tank treads and crushing feet. Its body was slanted, tapering to a head that was all brutal jaw and piggish alien eye windows. Every meter of its scrap metal torso bristled with tiered weapons platforms. It was quite the ugliest and most offensive thing Havelock had ever seen, and that was more than simply because it was an affront to the purity of Mechanicus' god-machine creation. No, more than that. It offended him because its manifestation before him made no sense. It dwarfed Storm Herald. It seemed impossibility given form, striding, limping from the oily smoke that blanketed the district. Havelock pulsed a digitally translated pict of the enemy Gargant across the mind bond to Princeps Zaha and any other Titan commander in range. It was all the warning he would be allowed to send, for Godbreaker opened fire the very moment its main armaments cleared the smoke. Ivory Fang was pulverized beneath enough solid laser and plasma weapon fire to level a city block. Its demise, and the end of Havelock's mediocre career, was marked by a vast crater that would remain for decades after the war had bled the whole world almost dry. Godbreaker moved onward.